Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Pharmaceutical Commerce Podcast. I'm Nico Saraceno, Associate Editor of PC, and I'm here with Julian Upton, PharmCom's Editor-in-Chief. We are pleased to be joined by Nellie Rose, Vice President of Clinical Consulting for NFP, an insurance broker and consultant that provides solutions to clients that span numerous industries. Today, among various items in the agenda, she'll be addressing the increase in prescription drug spending, along with ways to find more affordable options for driving down pharmacy spends. Nellie, Julian, and I really do appreciate you taking the time to join us on the show today. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks, Nellie. This is Julian. I just want to kick off with the question about that rise in prescription drug spending. What do you see the reasons for this and the main drivers of the increase?
Well, I can tell you there's been several drivers over the last few years that have contributed to an ongoing rising cost in medication, primarily due to specialty medications. So when you think about specialty pharmacy, those are high cost, oftentimes biologic treatments used for some of the rarest novel conditions. We've seen a steady increase the last, you know, almost a decade of specialty spend. Conditions that can kind of have contributed to this uptick in spend have been in the autoimmune space and oncology. Kind of more recently, some of the trend drivers that we've seen within specialty have attributed to an uptick from orphan drugs. So orphan drugs are what I would consider the 1% of 1%. They are novel agents used to treat rare conditions. And a rare condition is actually defined as a disease state that impacts less than 200,000 Americans. So very rare, very unique. So you would imagine those therapies would be quite costly to treat something very unique. For the first time ever, we actually saw that specialty spend attributed to 51% of our total pharmacy costs. And we do anticipate that this will continue to rise in the coming years as specialty becomes the trend driver and more utilization continues for some of these progressive disease states. So when we think about specialty, I'll give you a prime example. Drugs like Humira in the autoimmune space continues to dominate the spend, continues to be the number one drug in the industry. Humira is used for a slew of indications, autoimmune conditions such as Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis, and it's a very, very popular prescribed drug. Also seeing increases in oral oncology. We have seen a rise and continue to see a rise in the pipeline for new drug approvals and breakthrough therapies and continue to see an increase in utilization. So oncology is another trend driver within specialty. When you think about non-specialty drivers, they're still impactful. A few conditions to name that have seen year-over-year trends have been obesity, migraines, especially the new CGRP drugs. Diabetes therapy continue with high cost insulin therapies. And of course, the COVID-19 pandemic that, ultimately had an uptick for us in 2021.
And that's certainly a great segue for us, Nellie, because that is, I think for the past few years, certainly it's been the elephant in the room. What would you say the impact on vaccine spending has been as it pertains to COVID itself? What have you noticed?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, we've been spending a lot of time talking about what we saw in 2021 and how that was financially impactful to our clients. When you think about the rollout of vaccines in early 21, it led to an increase in spend due to the sheer volume of vaccine adoption, second shots, booster shots. So towards the end of 2021, there was also new drug approvals for oral antiviral therapies. And then, shifting that over to 22, the federal mandate for employers to cover over-the-counter COVID tests all kind of contributed to this acute uptick in spend over, less than a 12-month period of time. So when you think about, what we saw in 21, as far as growth, we saw an approximate 5% growth that was related to COVID spend. Across our book of business within our consortium, we saw approximately $2 per member per month increase in cost for COVID vaccine. So our clients like to be able to relate that to a PMPM finance or financial metric. So it really related to about $2 PMPM. But the silver lining is that the dust is beginning to settle. We are beginning to see declining costs attributed to COVID in general. And we do anticipate to get back to pre-pandemic trends in the next few years.
So if we could talk a little bit about the company, the NFP, can you talk to us about how you work with employers and with other clients to address rising RX costs?
Thank you. Our company is a coalition and consulting firm. NFP, we are the pharmacy consultant arm of NFP as a whole. National Finance Partners, insurance broker, have multiple segments within our company. We have property and casualty, life insurance, voluntary benefits, and obviously corporate benefits, for which we, myself, my team, are the pharmacy consultant arm. So the way that we support our clients is truly, our motto is knowledge is power, okay? Understanding data, putting a value on it, understanding what trends are not only now, but upcoming, help prepare our clients to make right decisions, whether it's understanding drug costs, understanding industry trends, legislative changes that allow for them to make actionable decision-making that will be sustainable to help manage their trend year over year, but also help them offer a really rich benefit that takes care of their members and allows them to be sustainable year over year. So some of the things that we offer is real-time data. We actually receive claims information in real time, the day of, which is not always common in this pharmacy industry. Typically, companies make decisions retroactively, you know, months after they saw data, months after they look at the financials, they start to make decisions. As quickly as we are evolving in the pharmacy industry, decisions have to be made faster. So having that access in real time allows us to make real-time decisions that are proactive, and our clients appreciate that because they can get ahead of the curve. So when we talk about specialty spend now, we saw this coming 5 years ago, and we were preparing our clients for it then.
Wow, that's pretty impressive, being able to have that proactivity as opposed to reacting perhaps when it's a bit too late. So pretty amazing to see that.
We do a lot of research. We spend a lot of time looking at the pipeline and trying to understand where we're moving to and where we're heading.
That's exciting. And something else that Julian and I found interesting upon doing our research before we spoke to Nelly was NFP's benefits trend report that you put out. It revealed that employers say that benefits design has the greatest positive impacts on prescription drug spend. And it's followed closely by what's known as vendor selection. Could you talk a bit more about what these approaches are for our listeners and what they mean exactly?
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes they even go hand in hand. So, you know, let me talk about benefit design first. When you think about what is the purpose of a benefit design, it is intended to drive consumerism, to help direct members to preferred or lower cost alternatives. When you have a limited benefit design, sometimes you don't open doors for new therapies to come in or lower cost alternatives to come in. So you're almost limiting the opportunities for your members to evolve. 7 years ago, we were talking about creating a fourth tier that focused benefit coinsurance specifically for specialty, even though it was, you know, very minimally utilized. We had about 1% utilization at that point in time in the industry. It was hard for a lot of people to grasp why they needed a specialty tier. Well, lo and behold, here we are. A few years later, we're having specialty dominate our pharmacy spend. Patents are starting to expire. We're starting to see generic drugs come into the mix. We're starting to see biosimilar drug approvals. So when you don't have a benefit design that accommodates those changes, you're really kind of leaving yourself in the dark. So nowadays, we have increased our tiers within the benefit to accommodate all those new and moving parts. So we're up to 6 tiers within some of our plan designs to find a place for our new specialty generics, for upcoming biosimilars that will come into the mix. And then also, obviously, the preferred brand agents that have already been in the industry. So benefit designs are intended to be adjusted and evolved as the market does. So then when you think about vendor selection, this kind of goes hand in hand. And I'll keep this high level because vendor selection can mean a slew of things. But when you try to understand as an employer group what your options are, knowing what, you know, we're seeing in the industry with the pipeline, with the trends, how do you get ahead of it and what are your options? Some of the highest level opportunities would be looking at your current pharmacy benefit. Are you carved in? Is your pharmacy benefit carved in with your medical carrier? Do you have kind of an off-the-shelf solution, kind of a standardized benefit design? Are you self-insured? Do you consider having a carved out situation? If you are carved out, are you carved out directly with a PBM or are you part of a consortium of businesses? That's really my bread and butter, the consortium piece, because we can help a large mass of employers get the benefit of obviously better discounts, rebates, have management, give us insight on industry insights as a whole, big picture. So that way we can help our small groups make informed decisions. You know, obviously carving out your pharmacy benefit allows for customization really to align with your company culture, because obviously different employer groups have different focuses, you know, union groups, schools, healthcare, law firms. It's not a one size fits all. Your pharmacy benefit should not have an off-the-shelf solution for all the different moving parts and what we're seeing in the industry, looking at trends and utilization. And, you know, more or less understanding companies' culture so that way we can find truly the right solutions that are available for them. Something kind of an easy button of what I like to mention when I talk about carved out solutions. When you carve out your pharmacy benefit, you're allowing PBMs to compete for you. Okay. Let them do the work to get your business. Let them prove their value to you. And that's really where we go from there.
If we stay on that theme for a little while longer, what are the solutions maybe on the horizon? What's looking promising in your view in helping employers find these lower cost options for the biggest drivers of their pharmacy spend?
Yes. You know, more than ever before, we have to think about creative solutions. Constantly, I'm having clients ask questions of, you know, where do we go from here? What is the next step? What are our options? They're more than ever considering creative solutions than ever before. So when you think about the opportunities and the solutions available in a carved out space, some high level programs such as alternative sourcing. So when you think about alternative sourcing, it could be as something as international procurement, Canada, or medical tourism, actually paying for people to leave the country to get drug administration at a lower cost and come back, you know, with a 3-month supply at a much lower cost. Prior auth carve outs and enhanced utilization management. So when you think about what that means, it's clinical oversight. So many drugs are coming into the pipeline and new approvals that have conditions we've never heard of before. We're constantly learning and trying to evaluate, you know, what are these drugs for? Because they're non-traditional, they're not standard anymore. So everything needs a little extra set of eyes in order to understand its value and where it's going. And so more than ever before, clients before had resisted going the carve out route, especially for prior authorization. But nowadays they are more accepting of it and there's a growing demand for it because of that enhanced oversight and understanding of value and direction. Some other programs include manufacturer assistance programs. So taking advantage of copay assistance cards that the manufacturer allocates for brand name drugs. Also patient assistance programs for those that qualify based on household income. And then, you know, when you think about the evolution of telehealth and the uptick that we saw in telehealth from 2020, having point solutions and care navigation for disease state management, apps, connected meters, connected devices that create ease of transparency and monitoring.
That definitely does add a bit of comfort, I'm sure, for a lot of people that there are all these various options at least available at their disposal. So that's a good glass half full sort of mentality. And you mentioned this earlier too, Nelly, the idea of biosimilars, obviously a much more affordable alternative to the brand name drugs. How do you see the rise of these biosimilars, specifically relieving that drug cost pressure in the next few years moving forward?
Yes, the future is looking bright and we are optimistic. Biosimilars are FDA approved biologic drugs that act the same in the human body as the original patented drug. But biosimilars cost a little bit less because, you know, they have the similar active ingredient. They already have the recipe. So they cost about 15 to 20% less of the original patented product. So what's exciting about the next few years is in 2023, next year in January, Humira will begin to lose its patent. The number one drug in the world, the number one cost driver in the world, is beginning to actually lose its patent. So as that continues throughout 2023 and more biosimilars come in to compete to lower the cost of this medication, we will start to see a little bit of financial reprieve. And this will be really the catalyst for many years to come as more products in this space and the autoimmune condition space will begin to lose their patents, such as Stelara, which is also a very popular drug in the industry. So when you think about financial reprieve, we anticipate an approximate $75 billion in savings by 2030 from the biosimilar market. So a lot of positive, optimistic excitement happening in our industry, and we are looking forward to it.
$75 billion. That's mind-blowing.
Not to be sneezed at.
Certainly not. It's certainly an attention-grabbing number and statistic there. So you've definitely left us, and I think the listeners, excited to see what the future holds, because, you know, any opportunity there is to save money in some way, shape, or form, I don't think anyone will really be opposed to that idea. So we really do appreciate you, Nelly, coming on the show to talk about all this prescription drug spending and what the future holds and shedding a light on this whole portion of the industry. So thank you so much for joining the PC podcast. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Absolutely. And for all you listeners, be sure to stay in the loop of our latest updates via our website at pharmaceuticalcommerce.com or on our SoundCloud page. Take care, everyone.